E.T. Phone Home.
I'm just having some brewski beers at my Mojo Dojo Casa house.
Wendy, I'm home.
There's no place like home.
I'm home!
Welcome to the House of Cinema podcast. I am your host, Joe Aragon, and with me today, Clara Curtis. And in the house today, the 10th annual Hunger Games. Right? It's the 10th annual one, right? 10?
Yep, you got it.
I got it. Well, you didn't react to it.
I wasn't sure how long of a games you were going for, and I didn't want to like cut you off. I wanted you to have your moment.
That was my moment. But now I was like, oh shit, is it not the 10th? Is it like a different number?
No, it's 10. You got it.
Regardless, we are talking about the most recent movie in the Hunger Games franchise, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, a movie releasing on November 17th. We have both now seen this movie. Clara, before we get into this, this is a public episode available to everybody who listens on Apple and Spotify, and if you're subbed to the Patreon for free. But you and I have been doing a deep dive on the Hunger Games franchise for the last 2 weeks on the Patreon side of things.
Mm-hmm.
How have you been feeling about the Hunger Games?
Rabid. Feral. I feel like I'm losing my mind.
In a good way.
In a great way. Yeah, Katniss Everdeen is my daughter. I am her dad. And I care about her so much. And so it's been a real treat, you know, doing deep dives with you back into her story, especially because I took things to the extreme and I started rereading the books to coincide with us doing the movies. So mm-hmm. I'm coming in and giving little TED Talks to you, and you are being so kind and patient and letting me do that. But I've been having such a blast. The Hunger Games is like such a important cornerstone of like my adolescence, and then like it's been a big part of my adulthood as well, just in terms of me being able to look back on the books and understand them from like a greater political scope, and just like seeing the real world applications that can be applied, and just like there's a lot of depth to them that you miss when you're 14 years old reading them for the first time, you know? So it's, yeah, I love this series. It's been so fun revisiting with you. We've been talking about doing this episode like all year, I feel like.
Yeah, it's like, been like in the works, like on our radar. Since we knew it was coming out in November, we're like, all right, once we know this movie's coming out, we're going to be doing a deep dive on the mm-hmm. movies, kind of getting into it before this movie comes out. So far for the Patreon, we've only talked about the first and second movies in the franchise. Yes. We still have Mockingjay Part 1 and Part 2. So this kind of falls weirdly in between our deep dives. But I kind of like mm-hmm. that it does, because it does kind of prepare me a little bit better for Mockingjay Part 1 and Part 2, mm-hmm. which arguably are the two movies in the franchise I have revisited the least. I've seen the first and second one a lot. I've seen Mockingjay Part 1 and Part 2 maybe two times at most.
Wow. Okay.
So this kind of falls in the perfect time and place for us to talk about the franchise. My question to you is, clearly it's an important movie to you, as you have already stated. And you know, I'll be honest, we've kind of had these conversations on the Patreon side already, so I'm very sorry mm-hmm. to you if we're repeating ourselves, but
that's okay.
Why do you think The Hunger Games is this beloved franchise, not just for you, but it's arguably out of all these YA dystopian franchises that were birthed in like the early 2010s, The Hunger Games, mm-hmm. hands down, the most popular, the most successful, mm-hmm. the most popular, the one that people are the most obsessed with. Why The Hunger Games and not Divergent? Why The Hunger Games, not Maze Runner? Why The Hunger Games?
I think part of it is a testament to Suzanne Collins and her work as a writer, and just her ability to craft a world that is so layered and detailed and complex and engaging for like any type of audience member. Like, I feel like her stories, while written for young adults, are very easily stories that anyone of any age can really get into. And I think that's a big plus. She's great about avoiding like plot holes and whatnot. Like, she really ties her world up in a neat bow.
Yeah.
And so when it came to adapting them for the screen, like, for the most part, the adaptations have traditionally been very faithful, despite what I might be saying on Patreon sometimes. But
well, I mean, that's the thing about book to screen adaptations.
Exactly.
There's no, very few, and I don't want to sound like hyperbolic and universal, but I would say a majority of film adaptations of books, I mean, there's not a single movie that exists that has word for word, sentence for sentence, detail by detail, has adapted a book completely 100%. I mean, there are going to be things you have to leave out because they just don't translate well to a screen. They don't work for budgetary reasons, or they don't work because the time has changed. I don't know. There could be a lot of different reasons, but that's just going to happen. That's going to happen.
Exactly. And then, I agree.
It's going to happen in this episode. I know you've read Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, and you're going to talk about the differences in from the book to the movie. But, you know, there are certain things that are going to be left out. That's just going to happen.
Exactly. Especially when you look at it from, like, a subjective manner of, like, the things that I might take from the text as, like, the most important pieces of the story could be totally like background noise to someone else reading the same story, you know? So it's like, yeah, that's a whole other part of it too, of why you don't see everything you quote unquote want to see. But that aside, I think the other thing, and we've talked about this a little bit on the Patreon as well, so repeating to you, but maybe not to other people, is I think what The Hunger Games did very wisely, and this again honestly is a testament to Suzanne Collins and her choice to, like, write the story when the story comes to her rather than just write the story because I'm making money off the story. These movies came onto the scene right as Harry Potter and Twilight were ending, so people kind of had that hole in their heart for something in the same realm. And then they were a massive success. Everyone loved them. They were, like, monumental, just a big deal. And then they were all done. And then that book got closed, and we, like, not so much moved on, more than, like, said, like, goodbye to it. And so this is almost like a bonus gift that has come, like, super unexpectedly. And I think that route worked really, really well in its favor. Like, it didn't overstay its welcome at its peak, and now it's come back at a time where I think nostalgia, for better or for worse, is a big selling point for general audiences. And so The way they've kind of gone about that, I feel like, has been really smart to keep audiences engaged and, like, eager for more.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah. We've talked about how almost any other franchise that is this mega popular, that has really consumed the world, Hollywood will bleed it dry for all of its worth. Spinoffs, TV series, what have you. And The Hunger Games, surprisingly, has completed and really not reopened until this moment. And even reopening until this moment isn't the decision of a studio exec or some, you know, board of Lionsgate who are like, let's get another one out. It was Suzanne Collins who wrote another book and kind of allowed this movie to happen, which I think is a really refreshing surprise considering the world we live in now. But at any rate, well, what a way to start this episode.
We've been
in Pan Am for the last 2 weeks. I mean, we're fucking ready right now.
You're right. We've, like, it's like a runner's high, you know, where, like, you've run for a long time and you feel really good, so you want to just keep going. That's what it feels like. We've been running through Pan Am for a sec, and we're ready to keep going.
We have been. So if you haven't caught our drift yet, you want to check out those episodes over on Patreon. They're there. That's the last Patreon plug. For those listening, this episode will contain spoilers. So if you're looking for a spoiler-free discussion, unfortunately, this will not be one. Check out the movie and then come back afterwards. If you don't mind spoilers, then press on ahead. Before we jump into the actual movie, let's just get some details about the film for those who maybe are not aware of the movie. Maybe they're just listening to this podcast because they love our voices. Who knows?
Aw.
I don't know. That could be the case.
That's a nice thought.
Maybe they're working out and they're like, let's put on a podcast.
That could be it. We've talked about this before, too.
We determined, because
at first you were a little skeptical. You were like, I don't know if people are doing that at the gym.
Yeah, I didn't think people listen to podcasts at the gym as they work out, because mm-hmm. I, as somebody who goes to the gym, don't do that. I listen to John Wick soundtrack and Taylor Swift. I'm not listening to a podcast. But then I was wrong. Someone was messaged us and was like, oh, no, I listen to your podcast as I work out. So
yeah, if you got a lot of people saying that.
Yeah, if you are working out right now, keep going. Good job. Good job.
Pump that bar. I don't know. What do you say?
You can do it. One more rep.
Okay. Yeah. Good job.
Yeah. Do okay. a drop set. There. Next. There you go.
What is that?
What do you think a drop set is, Clara?
Do you like pick it up and drop it on the ground? That seems dangerous. You're not. Because I know they do that with deadlifting because it's too heavy, but they're like, I can lift it. And then they throw it up and then they're like, I have to drop it because it's too heavy. I know. I've seen videos of that. Is that what it is?
It's not a drop set, no.
Oh, what is it?
A drop set. Hopefully I'm not wrong. I look like a dummy right now. I'm fairly certain. That's what I've been calling it. Is when, like, let's say you do 12 reps of, squatting. And you do like 50 pounds. And a drop set is, okay, immediately as you finish your 12 reps, you pick up a 30-pound bar and you do 10. So you drop down in weight.
Oh.
And then you just do another set afterwards.
Because it feels easier because it's lighter.
Exactly. But it's supposed to get you like more fatigued, but also work your muscles out more. So drop setting. Yeah. Anyways.
Oh. Well, I'm learning. I'm growing.
So if you're doing that right now, keep going. And we're going to talk about The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
Perfect.
With spoilers, here's your IMDb summary. It's not great, but I'm going to give it to you anyways. It says, Coriolanus Snow mentors and develops feelings for the female District 12 tribute during the 10th Hunger Games.
Say her name.
Yeah, why? This is such
Lucy
a terrible...
Lucy Gray Baird.
This is such a terrible summary. Who wrote this? What are those interns at IMDb doing?
I don't know. Should we call them?
Maybe. Fortunately, I did my due diligence as a podcast host and pulled a Letterboxd summary because it's much better.
Those are sometimes better.
64 years before he became the tyrannical president of Pan-Am, Coriolanus Snow sees his chance for a change in fortunes when he mentors Lucy Gray Baird, the female tribute from District 12.
Okay, yeah, that's much better.
So much better.
That's much better.
Reading the IMDb summary, you wouldn't even know it's a prequel.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, that's...
I guess if you knew the 10th Hunger Games, but it's very vague. Rotten Tomato score. Currently, this movie sits at a 62%. The current consensus reads... Whoa. Outstanding cast and exciting story helps make The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes a worthy return to Pan-Am in spite of a rushed and somewhat frustrating ending. Mm. We'll maybe kind of pick this consensus apart and talk about it in more detail later.
Okay.
I want to give out the cast as well because there's some people here that I want to mention. I think they'll be coming up in this episode pretty often. So here's the cast. Mm-mm. Tom Blythe plays Coriolanus Snow, otherwise known as Corio. I'm going to start saying Corio because I hate the name Coriolanus.
Okay. We're his friend. We can call him Corio.
Coriolanus is such a mouthful.
It's very regal. You know, Coriolanus. It's like, I'm a highborn member of society. Like, only the greatest, most educated people can even put my name on their tongue.
Wow. Sure. Okay. Rachel Zegler plays Lucy Gray Baird. Josh Andre Rivera plays Sejanus Plinth. I'm not going to lie. Yep. The whole movie, I thought they were saying Sirjanus, like S-I-R space J-A-N-U-S.
Sejanus.
Oh, Sejanus?
I swear.
No. If they were saying Sejanus, I would have known because that is suspiciously close to anus, and I would have been thinking that a lot.
Well, Corio's name has anus in it, too.
Coriolanus. Oh, you're right. It does. I would have known Sejanus, though. It has to be Sejanus.
I think it's Sejanus. I was just listening to the audiobook today, and and I just watched the movie.
Sejanus, tomato, tomato.
Okay.
Sejanus, Sejanus, Plinth. Hunter Schafer plays Tigress Snow.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Dinklage plays Casca Highbottom, otherwise known as Cass. Jason Schwartzman plays Lucretus Lucky Flickerman.
Mm-hmm.
These are names.
Mm-hmm.
And Viola Davis plays Dr. Volumnia Gaul.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that one right?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Nice. Well, that's your cast. They'll be coming up later in this conversation, I'm sure. It's time to jump in now. My first question to you, Clara.
Okay.
Your initial impression walking out. How did you feel watching the Baldum Songbirds? How did it feel coming back to Pan Am?
It felt really good to come back into this world. Like, end all be all. That, I think, is one of the most striking, like, takeaways, is that it just feels good to come back into this world. And I think part of that is because so much of the crew from Catching Fire and both Mockingjays came back. So it feels very cohesive, even though it's a prequel. Like, the visual stylings feel very in line, and like just the overall aesthetics, like it felt really nice to be back in Pan Am. And so I think that was a big initial impression for me walking out. On the other hand, I finished rereading the book exactly an hour before I walked into my screening. Oh,
you nerd. Of course you did.
Wow. Okay. Come at me.
I can see you like walking out of work, still listening to the book, and then like walking to the movie theater.
It's so embarrassing because like I literally like was listening to the book as I walked to my car, then in my car, and then I got home and I carried my phone in and I finished the last like 20 minutes once I got home from work.
Of course.
You know me so well.
I do.
But so on that hand, I did, I think, feel disappointed, I think might be the unfortunate word to describe it, because the book was so, so fresh in my mind. And I will say too that on this reread of the book, I loved the book way more than I did initially.
Oh, really?
So like, yeah. So I came out of the book like, God damn, that was so good. And then I think that was honestly kind of a mistake. I almost wish I hadn't revisited the book until after I watched the movie.
Interesting.
It was just too fresh in my mind, I think. So like all of those changes that we kind of hinted at before, like just felt especially like sharp, which is a little rough. But those were like my main feelings. Like I was so, like I'm still very happy with the movie overall. I had a great time. I really enjoyed it. As a book nerd, I'm sad. But that's such a like niche problem, I feel like.
Do you think that's a niche problem? Or do you think, and this is kind of like my worry, is that The Hunger Games is such a beloved franchise because there are so many dedicated book readers. Mm-hmm. Like, I think very few franchises I think Dune is also a good example of, like, there is a fervent book fan club of Dune that also will attend these movies. You can't say that for all these book adaptation movies coming out. I feel like
that's true.
There are, like, your readers, obviously. But sometimes a movie will just be way more popular than the actual book. But I think The Hunger Games is the one franchise, you know, amongst a few others, where, like, there are a lot of book readers, voracious Hunger Game book fans who will be attending these movies. And like, that's a large part of this audience.
This is true. I feel like from that perspective, what the way I've been seeing it is it's very split, where the people who have read the book and really love the book are either like, this was a great adaptation, or they're kind of similar to me where they're like, oh, I feel kind of let down. Mm-hmm. It seems very, very split. And I don't know then it comes into play the question of like recency bias and like, okay, like, are you saying it's a better adaptation than maybe it actually is because you're just so stoked that it's here? Or like, you know, there's so many questions that come into play with something like that. But that also isn't to like discredit their opinions. But like some of the bigger, like TikTok people who like their whole thing is talking about the Hunger Games, I feel like they've mostly been very positive, which is very interesting.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so that's why I'm kind of like, I don't know if I'm being like in the minority or majority for that. I didn't see it that early, but I saw it a day earlier than like most general audiences.
Yeah.
So it's also like I'm early to the game right now. We'll see, I guess.
Okay.
How did you feel when you came out of it? Because, I mean, this is like definitely a much newer story for you.
Oh, yeah. I never even touched the Wikipedia for this book. Like,
oh,
The Hunger Games, we've talked about it already. We know where we talked about it. I'm not going to say where. But anyways, we talked about how I read the first Hunger Games book, but I've never read Catching Fire or Mockingjay. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, it was so popular. I read the Wikipedias. I've read them recently as well. And we've talked mm-hmm. about the differences as well.
Right.
When The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes came out, I was like, oh, intrigued by it, but it never mm-hmm. was motivated to pick the book up. I never looked it up to like read more about what's going on. So this mm-hmm. was brand new to me. I knew to the extent of the premise because of the trailers, but other than that, didn't really know where the direction was going. I had nothing. You know, I was blank slate going into this. And walking out, I think I want to echo what you said. It was so just... It's nice is a weird word to say because Panem is so such a terrible place.
Yeah.
But it was just really great to be back in this world again, because there's one thing I love about the Hunger Games franchise. It is this world. It does feel like it's such a fully realized, a fully just fleshed out world that Suzanne Collins has done such a good job creating. Mm-hmm. And I'm just intrigued by it. I just like want to know more about every district, and I want to know more about all these competitors and the tributes, and I just want so much of it. And it's weird because, like, if I'm feeling that way as somebody who hasn't read the books, I can't imagine how the book readers feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even crazier to think that Lionsgate or the studios haven't caved to making more Hunger Games content, considering how popular it is. So yeah. Kudos to them for not doing that. But yeah, so I walked out and was just happy to have been back.
Mm.
That being said, I did walk out thinking, like, I liked it. I did enjoy mm-hmm. myself watching this movie. I thought there was a lot of high points and a lot of great things about the movie that I want to praise. But I left in a sense of disappointment as well, which is weird because I don't have anything to compare it to. But I did feel like, even though I've never read the book, it felt like there was so much more that needed to be explored. And I was like, there has to be more.
Mm-hmm.
I walked out thinking, like, there has to be more of this relationship or of these characters or of this particular moment. They're like, there has to have been more that the book goes into detail. And so I walked out like, I liked it. I don't think it's perfect. I don't think it's better than, like, Catching Fire, you know.
No, still the gold. Catching Fire is still the gold standard for sure.
True, which is like an unfair comparison.
Yeah.
And we'll get into this maybe in a second, but I walked out thinking, like, oh, should that have been two parts? Should that have been like a... Well, so I posted a TikTok kind of give my review, and I said that. Mm. I said, maybe it should have been two parts just to give more time to these, you know, moments and these relationships. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were commenting. Some people were saying agreeing, but a lot mm-hmm. of people were saying, and I want to get your opinion on this. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were saying maybe it should have been a series. A 10 episode like HBO Max miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to know, as somebody who's read the book, you don't have to go into detail about the book itself, mm-hmm. but do you think that mm-hmm. would have translated well or maybe better to a series?
I do and I don't. I think series are hard. I think there's a very fine line between, you know, that decision of, okay, are we going to make this like a almost 3-hour movie, or are we going to make this a 10 plus episode series? And it's like, there's definitely a lot going on in the book. This is the longest Hunger Games book by a good couple hundred pages.
Oh, wow.
And so it's like it's a meaty boy, and there's a and there's
one way
to
describe it. Sure,
it feels right to say that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And there's a lot going on detail wise, like those details that you're craving. I feel like any like specific example you'd bring to the table, I could be like, yeah, they do a lot more with that.
Oh,
but do
we get more Sejanus Plinth in the book?
Way
no.
more.
Cause,
like,
damn it. Spoiler alert. He's my favorite character, I think. Or like, I found him the most interesting and most like fascinating.
Yeah.
And I adore watching
him.
That movie, and I was like, God damn, I want to just know more about this guy. And I want to mm-hmm. see like him interact with more people. Damn it.
Cause the other thing too, and this is where it's a very fine line because, like, the timeline in terms of how long these events are going on are very different depending on the section.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it, this is where I am like, it probably just makes sense for it to be a movie because you don't hit, like, Snow getting sent to District 12 until, like, Chapter 19.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's near the very end of the book. Like, the that section is very short in the book as well compared to the rest of the book.
Interesting.
So it's, like, which is interesting. But, like, overall, like, the game, like, the whole movie in general is as though you put the plot on, like, 2 speed. Like, they're flying through everything. They're combining multiple days into, like, an afternoon. Mm. Like, they've really accelerated the duration of everything. And so I think that contributes a lot to the rushedness of everything. Because, like, at minimum, Snow's time in District 12 is meant to last, like, an entire summer. And in the movie, it's, like, 2 weeks. Like,
it does not feel like a whole summer at all.
He's barely there.
Yeah, he gets there, and he, like, passed, like, an aptitude test. And they're like, all right, let's go to District 2, sir. You're going to go over there in 10 days. I'm like, oh, that was fast. Okay.
Yeah, it's... I have a section for this later. We'll see what I decide to talk about most. But yeah, they fly.
My question to you is, there an example I want to compare it to, and I want to get your thoughts on it, is Percy Jackson, which I'm not familiar with the story at all. Never read them. I don't think I've even seen the movies, if I'm being honest.
Oh my God, Joe.
It's like,
do you hear my disappointment?
It's like a water guy and a lightning guy and like a someone who's like a, what do you call the half goat guys? Like
a
Phil?
Satyr.
A satyr. Is there a satyr kid?
There is.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other kids are demigods.
Oh,
that's what
okay.
They're called.
Yeah, yeah. They're all demigods. So sure.
Put respect on their names.
Regardless, though, that's a series being transformed into a television series. And people are very excited. Do you think that was the right move for that series then? Well, we don't know yet because we haven't seen it. But
I know. That's tricky because it's like we haven't seen it yet. I'm very worried about how much they're using the... I always forget the name of the thing they use. I think it's called the Vision.
Sure.
That giant big screen that Disney made just for them. And they use it for Mandalorian.
Oh, yeah.
It starts with a V and I always forget what it starts... I don't know. But whatever it's called... The overuse of that in the trailer makes me a little bit nervous for Percy Jackson. But the casting's great, so we'll see. Okay. But Percy Jackson, I feel like, is much more justified because, like, Percy Jackson is, like, a multi-series, multi-massive book thing. Like, there's, like, God. At this point, I want to say there's probably, like, over 12 books.
What? That many?
There's a lot of books. It's a big series. They're great. I highly recommend. I love them. But, there's so much going on because the series is so big. And so a show makes a lot more sense because they have plenty to get through. You know?
According to Google, there are at least 7.
That seems wrong.
I'm just
that
letting you know.
That seems very wrong.
7 book collection.
But is that just the person? Because they are named slightly different. Hang on.
Oh, they have different names?
How many Percy Jackson books are there? I'm going to look like such a silly goof if...
It says 7.
That's true. That seems
3 ways
wrong.
To read all 30-plus Percy Jackson books? That is a different article.
Okay, I'm looking at that one too, and I'm gonna scroll through it and see because there's the main Percy Jackson.
Oh, there's
the
a lot of
series.
Short stories.
The
short story collection, short story.
This article's including the Kane Chronicles, which are in the same universe but are like very different. And then Magnus Chase is like an extension, but not. Okay, I see what's happening. There's a lot of books.
Okay.
There's a lot. But
so it makes more sense to do a series considering there's at least 7 books.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. There's quite a few. And like with those two, you know, they do a run with Percy as the main character and then they do a run with like a different main character who's like, you know, like involved with Percy. So it's like there's kind of this evolution of who you're sticking with in those. So like that also kind of aids itself to longer format storytelling.
Got it.
So that's where I'm kind of like, yeah, Percy Jackson makes way more sense.
Than a
like,
one book
yes.
movie. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we're here. we're talking about the length and kind of the rushness of the movie, which is, I think, for me, was my biggest qualm with the film. It is 2 hours and 40 minutes. It's not even a short movie.
No.
But even close to a 30 or a 3 hour movie, it does feel like it's just scratching the surface on like all of these relationships and all of these moments. Do you feel the same way?
Oh, wholeheartedly. And like part of that goes back to the fact that they accelerated the timeline so much. Like everything is they're hitting all the important notes, but you're missing all the little moments in between that really build on the, like these relationships that are so crucial to Snow as a person. And that's a downside for sure. And then it also makes the relationships almost feel like almost like comical in a way. Cause it's like, he's known Lucy Gray for like, 3 days before she goes into the games, and he's already like, oh my god, I'm in love with her. And that's just like,
it's so fast.
It's fast. And that's not to say their chemistry isn't good. Their chemistry is amazing. So like, you feel it, but
that's my issue too, because it feels like it's not even like rushing and it's all bad. The best and worst is that every moment is great. Like, all these moments are good, but it's like, we're just moving on from it so quickly. Like, their chemistry is good.
Yeah.
I love Snow's relationship with all these characters. I'm just like, I just want to sit with it more. I want to dig more into it, because it just feels like, oh, they're in love. Let's go to the next. Okay, it's Hunger Games. Oh, okay, she's being chased. Okay, let's move on. And it's so quick. Even the titular game itself is like not as exciting or tense, not intense as I thought it was going to be. I mean, like, the original Hunger Games is like, we're talking the first one and the second one, like the actual games. I mean, those are like moments I'll never forget. But these specific games in this movie, I feel like we just didn't sit long enough with the actual game, that I didn't really feel enough empathy with like a few of the characters who are dying. Like, even the one girl who's like the villain of the games.
Oh, Coral.
Coral. Like, she's like, seems evil, but like, I feel like she's so one note. And I feel like what the original Hunger Games and what the Catching Fire has done really well is that those characters at least have a little bit more layers to them. You know, we talked about Kato in the first Hunger Games. Like,
yes,
he is explicitly Kato, the villain and the bad guy and the guy that's like killing everybody. But when we finally get a chance with Kato at the end, he feels like a character. Like, we feel kind of bad for him when he dies because he's realizing what's happening to him. But you don't get those moments in this movie. And I feel like that's a little unfortunate, if I'm being honest.
I do agree with that. The games in particular, I think, are part of what frustrated me the most. But they were in a tough spot with those, because like in the book, since the games are so new, like they have like 6 cameras. They don't have enough cameras to actually film the games in their entirety. Like, anything underground, they just don't see.
Yeah.
And then they don't have like microphones, so the people watching the games don't hear anything. So the games are a lot more in the distance. Like, they're kind of withheld from you as a reader. And obviously that's not going to work in a movie.
Not at all.
But they also, it was odd, but because of that, like, because so much of the games is like a mystery to Snow, thus a mystery to the reader, they changed the games like completely. In terms of like how virtually every character acted, and then also who killed who, and like all of that, like all of that is completely different. And so it was a bummer. And I think that's part of why it felt more frustrating in a way, is because you're not doing what is like authentic to those characters. The story kind of shifted and warped what their true intentions were in the book. And so they feel a lot more flimsy, because it is like, this is truly just a film version of them. Like, it's not the whole picture of anyone on screen, which is interesting.
And I caught on to that as somebody who's not even read the book. You know, like, I was watching, and it just feels like all of these characters. There's one character in particular. I don't remember his name. Reaper? Yeah, I remembered his name.
Reaper.
Who I was like, well, this guy seems really interesting. But he's gone most of the games until he has one moment where he kind of collects the bodies and puts the flag over the bodies. And I was like, I like this moment. This is a moment I really do enjoy. Mm. But it does feel like many of these characters are just there. They're shells of characters. Yeah. We really don't know much about them. And I do think the one thing the original franchise did well, at least in the movies, was give them a little bit more substance. And
yeah,
that's kind of a bummer.
It's also interesting because in the book, Reaper is like the main, like, quote unquote, bad guy in the games.
Oh.
He's not this figure who, in the movie, they make him very blatantly like, what are you going to do? He's yelling at the Capitol into the camera. Like, he's very blatantly like, yes. Yeah. And that's not the case at all. Like, one of the big standout things with him is that when they're still in the zoo enclosure, like the night before, like the couple nights before the games, he goes around and apologizes to every tribute individually and says, I'm so sorry, I'm going to have to kill you.
Oh,
like,
wow.
He's like rearing to go, and he's the active one pursuing everyone throughout the games. So it was very interesting to see him change into this person who like allied himself with his district partner and like all of that. Like, there's pieces of him that are the same, like him collecting all the bodies and draping the Capitol flag over them, but it's a very different connotation because like he's the big bad in the book, so there's a lot more going on emotionally with that.
Wow.
So I don't know why they changed that. It was
time?
A big, I guess, but like Coral is like suddenly like the shining star for some reason.
Well, yeah. Well, I have no, my only explanation, hypothetical explanation, is that they didn't have the time to dedicate to develop Reaper into that interesting character. So they assigned a different person as the villain, and she gets to be the one note kind of big bad of the games.
Yeah, it's all interesting.
It is interesting. Let's pivot.
Okay.
Because I think what we've been talking about is kind of our main gripe with the movie.
Yes, I think so.
So let's pivot to maybe some more positive things. Because we do, because in the long run, we both liked it.
Yeah, I had a great time. I'm really happy with what we got in the end overall.
What I find interesting about this movie is that like it feels like it's split between veteran actors and like this really young and talented cast.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like everybody is just on their A game. Everybody's eating, no crumbs, and it's just really fun on both ends. But in terms of the younger new cast, like this new talent, do you have a favorite standout?
Ooh.
Specifically, I'm referencing Tom Blythe, Zegler, Josh Andre Rivera, Hunter Schafer.
I think out of the like fresh face, I think it is Josh Andre Rivera.
Dude,
like,
that's mine for sure.
Dude, he's so good.
He is really good.
I mean, they're all amazing. They're all doing really well. I need to emphasize that. But I mean, he's playing, like, I agree with you. Like, Sir Janus is like my favorite character from the book. So he's playing probably the most interesting person on screen, and he does it so well. Like, he was just eating up his screen time.
Yeah, I agree completely. He was the one I picked out as like, you know, I thought it was so interesting that he had come from a district and is now in the Capitol, and so he has like his foot in both worlds, and I just found that so fascinating. It's what I wanted the movie to expand on more. I don't want to take that away from Tom Blythe as Corio.
No, he's great.
Really good. I thought Zegler as Lucy Gray is
phenomenal.
Really good.
So good.
I will just ask you, as somebody who's read the book, do you feel like these characters were brought to life well with this cast?
Absolutely. Like, cool. I that's definitely my biggest praise, is that everyone on screen is playing their characters so perfectly. Like, awesome. They really do embody them, like, really, really well. And, like, like you've kind of pointed out, like they make you want to learn more about them. And that's such a big win, especially in a big franchise like this where there's 1,000,005 characters. It'd be so easy for people to like slip into the background, but I don't feel that way about any of them. Like even the smaller roles, I'm like so like engrossed with their time on screen that I'm just like, you're perfect. Like I can't envision anyone else doing this. Like you nailed it.
Out of the veteran actors, Dinklage, Schwartzman, and Davis. Favorite? Standout?
Oh, God. It's got to be Viola Davis.
I think so for me as well.
Okay.
I love Schwartzman as Lucky Flickerman.
He's
I think
great.
That's, you know, like, the Flickerman family. I mean, yeah. Stanley Tucci as Caesar Flickerman, right?
Yep. You nailed it.
Is... I mean, there's so many things iconic about The Hunger Games, but Caesar Flickerman is iconic in his own right. I was nervous that Schwartzman would not be able to hold a candle to it. And while I still think Caesar Flickerman is Caesar Flickerman, he did an excellent job being Lucky Flickerman. But Davis is definitely kind of the scene stealer. Like Dinklage a lot. I think, I don't know if I said this on the podcast before, but I think Dinklage is one of our most talented actors working today. Anything he does, I am just so enamored by it. I think he's incredibly talented.
I would agree with that.
I think he's good as Highbottom. I just kind of wanted more of him, if I'm being honest. I feel like he has a couple really cool scenes with Choreo. Just feels like I was missing. I just wanted more. There is this backstory they like kind of reference of him and Choreo's dad. I'll be honest. Sounds really cool. Wish I knew more, because I have a list of questions to ask you at the end, and one of them is kind of revolving around that. I'm like, what's going on there? Because I want to know more about it.
I have answers.
I like Highbottom. I like Dinklage as Highbottom. I just wish we got more of him.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. So Davis is your pick. Is anything in particular why Davis?
I think she's just... Dr. Gall is such an interesting character, and like in the book she's also this very like scary person, but also just like doing the most bizarre stuff that it you like you almost for moments don't take her seriously because she's being so goofy, you know?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like she's foaming at the mouth about killing children, and it's just like it's horrifying to deal with her. And I feel like Viola Davis really embodied that so well, where you're drawn to her, where she like lures you in, and then she says stuff that like repels you because it's so shocking and striking. And I feel like she carried the weight of that character really, really well. Like it just worked so perfectly.
Well said. I have nothing to add to that. I agree with you completely. I've already alluded to it earlier, but I have some questions for you that maybe you can clarify for me as someone who's read the book. Maybe I missed it in the movie.
Okay.
The relation, Choreo's dad is, who is he? What did he do wrong? Did he create the Hunger Games? Did he was a rebel and was hung? What exactly is the backstory there? I'm not going to lie. I think that a few of the things that they're referencing in this movie, they're just kind of saying it in passing.
Yes.
And I'm just like, wait, what's going on? I don't really understand. I'm a little confused of exactly what's going on. And hopefully that's not just me. If it is just me, sorry, everybody. Maybe my media literacy is going down the drain. But no, who is this? Who's Choreo's dad exactly?
His father was Capital Born. A big part of it that they kind of try and touch on, but they don't ever really, is that the Snow family, like before the war.
They're poor.
Before the war, they're rich. Before the war, they're like one of the most prestigious families in the capital. And so that's why we see Snow early on maneuvering in a way where we see his home. We know he's not doing well. We know they're not able to pay their bills. But then when he's around the rest of his colleagues and like peers, he's like, oh, like this is, the buttons look like my maid's bathroom. And it's like, babe, we know you don't have a maid at home. Like we saw your bathroom.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Completely missed that.
Yes, so they do that very vaguely, which is a little frustrating. That's always been something I feel like the movies don't touch on quite as well as the economic status within the capital itself. And this tries to do a little more of that, but it doesn't. But so the Snows were like high, high important people. And then the war started during that, during that essentially, like Highbottom and Snow were like best friends. They turned in an assignment. that Highbottom didn't actually want to turn in, which led to them deciding to make the Hunger Games a thing once the war was won. But his father essentially was a man who hated the districts with, like, his entire chest. Like blindly just hated anyone from district at all. And so he very eagerly went to war to fight them and kill them. And he was ultimately... And he was killed by a rebel at one point during the war.
What? I completely missed that. Maybe I just misunderstood that. I thought he was a rebel.
No.
Well, my bad. Yes. Okay. Good thing I didn't write that down anywhere.
Oh, no, it's okay. So, yeah, so he was killed by rebels during the war. That, like, informs part of why, like, especially at the beginning, Corio is very, like, ugh, the districts. Like, they killed his dad, and his mom had just died giving birth to a child. So it's like he lost both his parents during the war. His father was a lot more unexpected in a way, which wasn't, like, hard for him, obviously.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, I completely missed that. I don't get the impression this movie did a good job really exploring that, if I'm being honest.
No, they really lean into the, like, oh, your dad was such a hateful man. Like, they really, really lean into that. Well, that's
why. I was getting the impression that everybody hated his dad.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, they must hate him because he was, like, against the Capitol for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know why they went so overt with that, because it's, like, there's definitely people, like, who weren't a fan of his father, but it's very subtle because it's like social hierarchy, you know, like you can't just say that with your chest in the Capitol. That's not how it works. So it was very bizarre hearing everyone say, like, very point blank, like, oh, your father. I was kind of like, guys, like, we don't need to do this.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, thank you for clarifying that.
Of course.
Second question.
Okay.
Sir Janus Plinth.
Mm-hmm.
How did his dad get rich? How did he get all this money and he was able to buy himself out of the district and into the Capitol?
Yes. Okay. So
I'm confused by this because it doesn't make sense to me, because I've always felt like if the Capitol doesn't want you to be rich, they won't let you get rich. So I'm confused at how the Plinths were able to leave the district. Can you clarify that for me, please?
I sure can. So District 2, which we've talked a little bit about before, is the district that is known for, like, training up peacekeepers and, like, supplying weapons. Like, they build the weapons there.
Mm-hmm.
So when the war started, Sir Janus's father essentially, like, turned against the rest of the district and was helping the Capitol build better weapons and distribute those weapons. And he became, like, a major arms dealer. So he became, like, filthy rich during war, because we know people love to buy weapons.
Yeah.
And they love to up the ante with that. And so he made an insane amount of money. He put himself against the districts, so the Capitol kind of accepted him as, like an aid to the Capitol, essentially, right? So, like, behind the scenes, everyone's looking down on them still because they are district born, but because of the amount of money he obtains through, like, turning on the districts, he's able to move his family to the Capitol and then, like, establish themselves as, like, a very wealthy contributor to the Capitol environment.
Got it.
Yeah, there's this whole thing, they don't ever touch on it in the movie, but, like, Sir Janus obviously is not about it, and then his mother as well is very, like, money is so evil, like, I hate what it's turned us into, like, I don't like being here, and so there's this internal, like, tension between the family where, like, the father is so, like, if I give enough money to these people, our son's life might not be better, but his children's lives will be better. Like, he's trying to establish, like, what is that called? Wealth within the family. Like, long-term wealth. I don't remember the word
generational
for that. Yes, wealth? Generational wealth. Clearly, I don't have it.
Neither do I. It's okay, neither of us two.
Okay, so he's, like, his father's very committed to this idea of establishing generational wealth within the Capitol for his family. So that's kind of, like, the backbone of that.
Okay, didn't...
Yeah.
I didn't really understand. Like, I understood that the Plinths were from the district. They made it very clear in the way they treated Sir Janus.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not get the vibe that, like... of anything else you mentioned. So thank you for clarifying that.
Of course, of course.
My last question is kind of maybe the perfect question to segue to the ending.
Okay.
Which I've seen some people complain about being rushed, which is, you know, another extension of what we've been talking about for the last hour. How does, so does Lucy actually die? Because in the movie, it's very, it's, I think it's intentionally a little ambiguous. Like, he's looking for her, screaming for her. He sees her running and shoots at her. And, but he, like, never finds her body. Is that ambiguous intentionally? Is that how the book ends? Is, do we know she's dead? Or do we not know she's dead?
We don't know in the book as well. It's very ambiguous. I would actually say the movie is more obvious than the book.
That she's alive.
In that, well, who knows? But, like, the thing with the book even is that it's the same structure where he's, like, looking for her in the forest. He gets bit by the snake. He kind of falls into this, like, oh, my God, I'm going to fucking kill you kind of thing. And he, but he doesn't see her in the distance. It's more like he just assumes she's in a general direction. And so he's just blindly shooting into the forest and thinks he hears a faint cry of pain. But he doesn't know for sure because he's kind of like losing his mind in that moment. And then he can't find her body. So it's kind of just the assumption of she's probably dead or she'll die soon. And like, I mean, in the original Hunger Games trilogy, she's obviously only mentioned once offhandedly because before, like, she wasn't a character quite then. But it's very much like no one knew her name. No one knew where she went. Like, she just vanished. So it's like, it's very much, I think, kind of implied that she probably did die. But it also, I mean, this is a good example of like having the text in front of you too. She sings a song about herself, like her, someone with her name. And then like they talk about it by the lake where he's like, okay, did Lucy Gray die in the song? You know, and she's kind of, she kind of offhandedly is like, well, maybe she flew away. And that's kind of what they replicate in that moment where you see him following her footprints and then her footprints vanish because it's raining. And then you hear all the mockingjays sing and her sing. And it's kind of like, Okay, maybe. So it's very intentionally ambiguous in the book as well. But I definitely understand why that would be frustrating.
Got it. Okay. I assumed it was supposed to be ambiguous and like we're not supposed to know if she lived or not. And that's kind of not the point. If anything, it's supposed to be like this lingering question that Snow kind of sits on for the rest of his life. Like, is she still around? Like, will I ever get turned in by her? Like, it'll always be like this thing in the back of his head. And I kind of like thinking of it like that way. Like, oh, she will always have the upper hand on me because I don't know if I actually killed her or not.
Right.
Which it makes sense to me in the sense of why he's so adamant on killing someone like Katniss, who's, you know, has a lot of the same qualities of Lucy. It reminds us, you know, reminds her, him of her so much. But anyways, okay. Thanks for clarifying that as well.
Of course. Of course.
Let's see if there's any other questions I got here. Let's see. I don't think so.
Great.
Those are the big ones. I appreciate you clarifying that.
Of course.
Anything else you want to say about the movie itself? Anything you want to talk about and expand on before we move to kind of... We talked a lot about the book and movie differences already, but...
I know.
is there anything else about the... but the movie you want to talk about before we move on.
How did you feel about all the songs?
They're fine.
Okay.
I didn't like... I think Rachel Zegler's an immaculate singer.
Amazing.
She's
amazing.
Beautiful voice.
Yeah.
I don't particularly was like fond of the songs themselves. I thought they were fine. Nothing I will find myself singing along to in the future or humming the tune of. Besides the Hanging Tree song, but that's, you know, that's the Hanging Tree song. Yeah, I thought the songs were fine. I do wonder if audiences will find the music aspect too much. If it would
be,
I
was curious about that.
What do you think?
Well, I think I was expecting it because it's in the books, obviously. There's a lot of singing.
Does she sing to the snakes at the games in the book?
Yeah, but it's Yeah, but it's like slightly, I mean, that whole thing is very different, but she is singing, and then it kind of falls into her having to like hum to the snakes. And then the snakes are not like the actual end of the game. Like there's more to the games after the snakes drop in. So, so there's a lot going on with that, but she does like sing to the snakes. But again, in the games, they didn't really have microphones. So you don't really hear her singing. It's more, they're like, oh, I think she's singing to the snakes. Mm. So it's like, yeah. So there are interesting things with that, but she, I mean, she's a she is a performer, like she's singing a lot. I feel like they did a good job because she's such a good singer with those, but I'm sure they, it was a probably like a very alarming element for people who don't know that going in, that this is gonna have a lot of singing. Like it's a lot, like she's
it is a lot right out. I was and it's cool that it's in the book. Actually, I saw a TikTok today. Did you send it to me?
Maybe it was, I did. You sent it to I me? Put it, I put it in our Discord. Is it the audiobook?
It's the audiobook reading out loud the lyrics.
Yeah, and I think that's why I like the singing so much, because usually I'm not a bit, like, I'm not a huge musical person. I don't like people singing at me. It makes me feel uncomfortable. And so, but I was so relieved to hear her singing, because I've been listening to the audiobook where, mind you, the person reading the audiobook is like a Tony Award winning performer. He can sing. He does all the songs in monotone. So, like, they sing, like, Clementine, and in the reading he does, he's like, oh, my darling. Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling Clementine.
That's and it so was, funny.
Every time I do the book, I'm like, oh, this is killing me. So I was really happy with the songs, because I was like, yeah, they can sing.
She is really good. She's a great singer. And I think audiences will be caught off guard by how many songs are in the movie, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't like take me out of the movie, though. The one time I was like, damn, we're still singing right now. But it's fine. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, this is maybe kind of more of the same what we've been talking about, but I did also find it interesting that Lucy's name was only chosen because the mayor was like paid off to do it, or like his daughter convinced him to do it.
Yes. Yes.
I thought that was interesting too, but we don't really get much of that relationship, because immediately her name's called, she does her little bit, and then she's gone. But I thought it was interesting to kind of find out that revelation in the movie.
Yeah, it's a very cool element that, like, Lucy Gray was really not supposed to be drawn, but she was. And, like, part of that they also don't really touch on is, and she tries to make this distinction a little bit, but they really drive it home in the books more, that, like, she doesn't consider herself part of the district, because she was part of, like, a traveling group who was supposed to go from district area to district area as a performer. Oh. So, like, she's a major outsider within her district to begin with, before the drama with the mayor's daughter. Like, they like her group as performers, because, like, it's nice having entertainment, but, like, everyone definitely doesn't, like, regard her as part of their community necessarily. So it is an interesting aspect that, like, this girl who, like, isn't from that district is, like, thrust into the spotlight as their tribute, and it's done in a way where it's, like, rigged, and so she's, like, struggling in that regard. And then when she gets back, it's not like she gets the glory of being a victor, because she's still amongst people who don't even view her.
Yeah.
So it's like, poor Lucy Gray.
Wow. All right. Well, we've reached this point where we've talked a lot about book to movie differences, but is there a couple things that you think were like glaring big difference that you think would surprise audiences who have never read the book?
I think I kind of already touched on the one, which is just the entirety of the games and who kills who, and like the way that all plays out is so, so different in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely find the entirety of the book version way more compelling.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just more interesting in the book, honestly. So that's a big one for sure, without going into the finer details. Because that's my one thing is, I'm like, I know people will read the book because they've seen the movie now.
True. I don't want to spoil the book either, yeah.
Exactly. I want to, like, touch on things, but I don't want to do too much spoiling, because, like, there is really interesting stuff with that. I think the other big glaring thing for me throughout was the isolation of Snow, I felt was really frustrating. Like, he is definitely, like, someone who feels like he's very precarious in his position within his like class and like wherever he goes, because he's constantly trying to like get that step up in his position, right? Like he's very concerned about how his family is viewed by the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a lot of friends. His relationships with his peers in the movie are very like combative or non-existent at all, which I don't really like. And then when he goes to District 12, like by that point, it's like he and Sir Janus already consider each other brothers. And it's not really quite as one-sided as the movie makes it out to be in a way.
Oh,
like,
yeah, they definitely make it very one-sided.
That's what bummed me out the most, I think, in a way, because like they really do like act like brothers to an extent. Like they like there's this inner conflict within Snow, because we are in his head, where he's repulsed by Sir Janus's views of the Capitol versus the district, but he also like it's his friend, like he cares about him. So there's always that ebb and flow of that I think we're lacking in the movie, because they try and keep him so isolated. He also like makes a ton of really good friends in his barracks that are just not characters in
there
the
are
movie
not
at
even
all.
Yeah, they're not even people here.
Not a thing. Like he really does like form like a little family in District 12. Like among yeah, and so it's a bummer that we don't have that aspect, because I think it is important to look at the polling direction that he's in the middle of, where like there's a fork in the road and he can either lean into humanity via Sir Janus and Lucy Gray and those people, or he can lean into the cruelty of humanity, as Dr. Gall would call it, and lean into her guidance and his father's legacy. And so like I feel like that gets really minimized in the movie, and that bums me out, because that's definitely like the most interesting part of the book, I would say, is just seeing that gradual ebb and flow of that within him. But that's also really hard to translate to the screen, because it's so heavily like internal monologue.
Yes and no, I would say. I mean, again, I haven't read the book, and so whether or not the direct translation would work for the screen, but I do find it a little frustrating that we don't get enough like internal battle within Snow.
Yeah.
It never feels like at any point in the movie he's like heavily trying to change or like wants to be full on rebellion, and maybe like
right.
and like I don't know what the book says, but like at no point did I think that Snow was ever like having this internal struggle. A few times like mm-hmm. with Lucy, mm-hmm. but like I feel like Sir Janus's death in this movie, which was a really emotional and tragic moment,
yeah,
could have been more emotional. There could have been a lot more emphasis on it if we had gotten the feeling that like they were really close. Because throughout
yeah.
that second half where they're in the district, they're really still combative.
They're fighting.
They're fighting all the time. They're always disagreeing. I'm like, oh, you guys like barely like each other.
Yeah.
And I never got the feeling that like they were brothers. And I feel like mm-hmm. if I did, then Sir Janus's death would have been a lot more emotional, a mm-hmm. lot more tragic, a lot more heavy. But mm-hmm. that doesn't happen. And that's kind of unfortunate. It's still a really tragic moment and really sad.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things where like just the time was allocated to kind of moving the story forward rather than kind of sit with these relationships.
Yes, it feels a lot more like we got to make sure we hit all these key plot points.
It does feel like that. It does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Last question for you.
Okay.
Where does this fall in the franchise for you, though?
Oh, God. Oh, geez.
I know. I did not prepare you for this one. That's my bad.
You didn't. And this is so rough because I haven't revisited The Mockingjays yet.
Not yet. You will be in the future. The very near future.
Yeah, and I'm starting my reread of the Mockingjay book tomorrow at work, and then and then we record. I don't know if I can say with any sort of definitive clarity. I think it might end up still near the bottom. I don't know. Oh, I don't know. Where would you put it? Where are you feeling? Do you have an answer?
It's hard to say because I have not watched Mockingjay Part 1 or Part 2, and I will be watching
Perfect.
It. By the time this episode is published for the public, it's Tuesday,
yeah.
November like 22nd or 21st, something like that.
Oh, Jesus. That's weird.
21st. And wow. I would have already, at this point, have seen Mockingjay Part 1.
Okay. Yep. Same.
But we're recording this on November 16th, so
yeah.
I have not watched Mockingjay Part 1
or Part
2.
We're in the past right now.
I know. It's weird. We're like manipulating time. Like, whoa, we're in the past and future at the exact same time.
I know. Wow.
So with that being said, off the cuff, top of my head, Catching Fire, Hunger Games, Ballad of Songbird and Snakes, Mockingjay Part 2, then Part 1.
Okay. Let me pull like my old ratings from the Mockingjays, and that might help me a little bit. Because I would agree, Catching Fire is number one. There is no question. Let's see. Oh, okay. So, I think at this moment it would probably, and I mean, feel free to fact check me at the end of the month when I actually post the proper ranking. But Catching Fire, Mockingjay
part one, of course, part one,
because I love a penultimate.
You do. We're so opposite in that.
I know, we're exactly opposite in that. I think it's so fun. So okay, so Catching Fire, Mockingjay Part One, Mockingjay Part Two, Hunger Games, Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
Whoa, last for you, huh?
I think so.
We'll have to revisit this in a couple of weeks when we finish Mockingjay Part 1 Part 2.
Yes, yeah, we'll have to have like a proper, I know, and we'll have to really dissect our feelings at some point and give a proper ranking.
I wonder how different your ranking would be if you hadn't read the books.
I'm always so curious about that for me as well, because it's like, clearly, I've made it very clear in just this episode, I know these books.
You like, do, you do.
I know a lot about these books. And so, it is curious to think about, like how would I feel differently if I didn't. I'm really excited because my sister's about to come home from school for break, and we're going to go see Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. So I'm going to do a second rewatch in the next week as
well. Oh, that'll help too.
That'll help a lot. And I'm looking forward to that because she might have read the book, the original trilogy. I don't know for sure. And then she definitely hasn't read the book for this one. So I'm curious to see how she kind of ranks and feels about everything with that, like, lack of knowledge.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just supposed to TikTok about ranking this franchise. So I might have to, like, watch Mockingjay Part 1 and Part 2 just to prepare for that TikTok. Because I don't know. That makes sense.
I feel like you should. I feel like it'll be helpful. Especially because you don't like penultimates, and I feel like you'll be like, if you have to watch Mockingjay Part 1 and then you have to wait like a week to watch Part 2.
Yeah, I might have to go back to back on those. I don't know if I have to wait. I can wait a week.
I don't know if I could do it.
I'm being honest. Anyways, okay, all right. Well, that's where we're now. We will see if those rankings change in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll get a chance to update the public side of things, but, you know, maybe we can.
Maybe one day.
All right. Well, we've had our discussion on Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. You want to add anything else?
I want to ask you one more question.
Go for it.
Early on, when we were first getting, like, our first trailers, I was feeling a little perturbed because I felt like the trailer showed so much, admittedly without context, but showed so much. And now that you've seen the movie, do you feel like that too, where like you were seeing a lot of stuff in the trailers, or is that something that like wasn't on your radar at all?
That is a good question. I know I at least watch one trailer.
Okay.
We've talked a lot about how we try to avoid trailers, but going to the movies so often, it's kind of impossible to avoid trailers.
Yeah,
how many trailers do they show at your showing, by the way? Do you know?
Oh, are you asking me this because of our text last night?
Yeah. I text Clara, we were like talking about what time they were going to be done to record this episode.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, a movie starts at 3, I'll get out at 6. And I was like, oh, I was being like, no, you'll be out at 6:10 because there's going to be 15 minutes of trailers. But I wrote it
but
as
you didn't
15
say minutes. You just said there'd be 15 trailers and you had already seen the movie. So I was like, oh my God. And so then I was like, 15? I don't want to watch 15 trailers. I don't want to watch the trailers. And so
how many were there?
Oh no. I watched all of them, but
I do want to start doing that as a part of our episodes, trailer recaps.
I started a thread on Twitter where I'm doing, like, I'm logging essentially the trailers I watch, like, before I, like, my DVD menus.
Oh.
So I think that's really interesting, too.
Did you know that some, like, Blu-rays give you updated trailers?
I would love that, because I've been on a streak of, like, 4 or 5 different discs I've popped in. No trailers. It's depressing. Oh. It's making me really sad.
I don't know how often they do this, but, like, some, I think it's Blu-ray players, maybe the discs themselves, but they, like, it'll recognize it's the studio, and so it'll pull, like, the most recent trailer from that studio.
How does it do that?
I don't know. I could be totally making this up, and maybe it's not happening, but I swear it's happening.
You're envisioning a future that maybe we don't have yet.
That could totally be it. Who knows? But anyways, I didn't see any trailers at my showing, so I don't know.
Oh, right, because it was so early. So yes.
So can you tell me what trailers you saw?
I saw Wish.
Okay.
I saw the one with Ryan Gosling and
Fall
Emily
Guy?
Blunt. Yes, I saw that one.
Okay.
I literally my screening was 5 hours ago. It's just out of my brain. I think there were like 6.
That's a lot. You only got 2.
I know. I'm trying.
Color Purple?
No, I didn't have that actually, but I've been getting that for everything Wonka. Else. I did have Wonka. I had Wonka.
Okay, that's kind of fun for me to guess.
I know this is actually so helpful because you have your finger on the pulse a lot better than I do too. So I'm like, oh, movies.
Aquaman?
I did have Aquaman. That was the last one.
This is
Aquaman
so exciting.
The Aquaman was the last one. Okay, this is great. This is so helpful.
We got 4.
The bear one. The scary movie with a bear. A teddy bear.
Oh, that's Chauncey. Brand new. That's some Chauncey? Brand new. That came out today.
Oh, really?
Imaginary?
No. Oh, is that what it's called? I thought it was the bear's name.
I'm pretty sure it's called Imaginary. Blumhouse, right?
I don't know. Yes.
Yeah, it's called Imaginary. The trailer dropped today. I didn't watch it, though.
Oh, wow. Well, I've seen that, and I said, oh, okay.
I'm trying to think of like other like teen movie that would come out.
It was a lot of stuff for Mean Girls, the musical.
Oh, we're at 6 now.
I think that might have been all of them.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah. Okay.
And watching all those trailers, I didn't feel compelled to see any of them.
I was gonna. My next question was like, okay, scale 1 to 10. Let's go through each. Wish,
okay,
scale 1 to 10.
Well, let's do it. Okay, yeah, let's scale them. The one with the...
Wish.
What's it called? No, not that one.
Fall Guy? I was starting with Wish, sorry.
Oh, yeah, start with Wish. Okay, sorry. I'm, like, jumping. I'm like, I gotta do the one I remembered the most.
Let's just start with Wish.
Wish, I mean, we love animation. I'm gonna see the animation movies.
Same.
But, like, excitement level, I'm probably, like, a solid 6.
That's where I'm at. I'm, like, at a 6, 6.5, dude.
I'm not feeling... I think the problem is I don't like all the little goat jokes in the trailer. They're rubbing me the wrong way. I don't want the goat making jokes at the audience during the movie, and that's what it's giving. It's like, I'm not...
Have you heard snippets of the Chris Pine song yet?
Yeah... I don't understand enough about music to really get what's everyone is upset about.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
But I don't like the song. Is that the problem? People just don't like it? I don't know. Is there a bigger problem with that?
I think the problem, at least that I had, and I tweeted about and got a little pushback on it, is that it just feels like this continuing trend of Lin-Manuel Mirandizing all of Disney's music.
Did he write the music?
No, he didn't. But that's the problem, is that like it feels like Disney is trying to replicate his type of music even when he's not involved.
Ooh.
And so the song is just like, it's just like poppy flat shit. I don't know. It just doesn't sound good.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, ugh.
What happened to like Hellfire from Hunchback and like Hercules songs? Like we used to get like ballads, like just like good songs, and now we just get like just it's just like I don't know. Don't like it.
Do you feel like that's partially like the transition of audiences' ability to pick up on story to an extent, where like the ballads from like our like OG Disney movies that we grew up with were a lot more like inference based, I feel like, in a way. Like it's a lot more about the emotion and gleaning from that, like what the enemy is trying to say, whereas now they're a lot more like overtly like, I'm a bad guy, I'm gonna tell you a
whole story about how I was a bad guy. That's a really good point. I do think that does play a big part in this, the kind of new music. And I do think, I also think, Lin-Manuel Miranda has had a really big effect on music. This is like, it sounds crazy, but Hamilton changed things. It was such a phenomenon that I think that a lot, this happens all the time. When there's a phenomenon, you're going to get so many studios and places and people trying to replicate that phenomenon.
Right.
And it works to some extent. Moana and Encanto are really good examples of it working still. But it just doesn't work for everything, and they're trying to apply it to everything, and I'm getting a little tired of it. I mean, did you see The Little Mermaid live action?
I haven't yet, but it's on, it's like top level of like my priority list end of the year stuff. So I'm hoping to, I have a bunch of new releases I got from the public library actually that I gotta get through before they're due, and then I'll probably switch over.
It's there's some really good, the newer songs, some are good. There's one that is atrociously bad.
Oh, well, like, I'll text you when I watch it.
Oh,
I'll
you'll know. I know. Everybody knows which song I'm referencing. Like, listeners listening right now, they know, like, immediately. They have PTSD from that moment. It is painfully, and I think Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote it, if I'm being honest. Anyways.
Okay, so that's Wish. that's how I'm feeling about Wish. Let's name this episode the Wish episode. Fall Guy. Well, now that I know that it's not that video game,
it's not.
I actually am feeling pretty excited for that.
Yeah,
I think I'm like a clean, like, it wouldn't be clean technically, 7.5. Okay. I like that. I'm feeling like good about it. I think I'm mostly excited about that one because I really enjoy movies about making movies, but they're usually about actors and directors, sometimes writers. So I think it's exciting to have a movie that obviously it's not entirely centering on this because there's a lot more going on, but at least partially centering around the reality of like a stunt person. I think that's really cool. So like, I feel excited about that.
Well said. I think that's a really good way to look at it. Sydney said in our news episode, maybe last week or 2 weeks ago,
I think it was last week,
that there's like this kind of feeling out in the world that if the action movie isn't John Wick or if it's not Mission Impossible, that people kind of write it off immediately. Like, oh, it's going to be bad, or like they're not going to give it the time of day. And that shouldn't be the case. We should be more accepting and more open to different types of action movies. And David Leitch, who is the person behind this movie, he did Bullet Train last year, which, to varying success, is popular with certain crowds and not other crowds. But if there's one thing I like about the movie, it is its choreography and its action.
Cool.
So I think I'm more open to The Fall Guy.
Yeah, I feel hopeful for that one especially, I think.
Wonka? Don't like be a Wonka three? Hater. Oh my God.
Is it a musical? I think they're tricking me. I think that's going to be a musical, isn't it? Because they're dancing.
Musical baiting you?
They are. I think they are because they're not singing, but they are dancing like they're in a musical.
I think it's going to be a musical. I think so.
I don't want that, Joe. I don't need
that. I know
that.
You don't, but come on, Timmy, Wonka.
I've seen Timothy Chalamet sing on stage at his school thing where he did that thing. You know what I'm talking about? I've seen enough. Okay. I don't need
to. I'm still trusting Paul King.
Okay. Are you excited? Like, what's your number for that one?
6.5?
Ooh,
seven,
okay.
Maybe?
Okay.
I trust Paul King a lot.
Yeah.
We love Paddington, too.
We do. I love the Paddington movies. I love that boy. He's so sweet.
I wish he was doing Paddington 3 instead of Wonka, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, that's kind of how I'm feeling. Because, like, Paddington, I want to be friends with and I want to hang out with and give a hug and, like, do fun things with. And like Wonka, I want to leave me alone. I don't want him giving me stuff that I eat and then I'm flying. I don't need that in my life. I'd kind of fuck with that. I feel like being entirely blue would be very gender affirming for me for some reason.
What about being turned to like a stretchy guy like Mike TV?
That would rip too. That would be dope.
Okay, so it sounds like you do fuck with Wonka then.
I fuck with OG Wonka, my boy. The man, the original man.
Fair enough, okay.
Baby boy Timmy, who I love, he's a good actor. But young Wonka, when he's experimenting, no. Get him away from me.
It's fair enough. Should I even ask you about Aquaman? 1-0? I don't think you're even going to go watch it, right?
I'm absolutely not going to watch that. I was sitting there just like nodding my head like, yeah, oh, you have a job now. Oh, you're a dad now. Oh, you have a little brother. Oh, the Black Trident. They give a whole, they it's tell a lot. You the whole, it's a lot. It's, there's a lot going on in that. And I was like,
okay, whatever.
No thanks. That's a 0. How are you? You're excited.
8,
how,
baby.
Yeah, I'm excited that you're so excited. Like, I'm excited to hear how you feel about it. I think that's the part of it I'm excited for.
Perfect. Okay. I haven't seen the Imaginary trailer, so I have no number for myself, but for you? Is it just a horror movie?
Yeah. It's like a proper, it's like, you have to, like, think like Megan, but more like demonic rather than like AI.
Oh, this is so strange. Do you know what the whole like hook to this movie was supposed to be?
What?
On Twitter, it was trending that the whole like buzz around this movie was that you had to close your eyes and listen to the movie and imagine the movie.
Oh, that'd be really interesting.
Yeah, but then they fucking put this trailer out and clearly that's not the case. So like a lot of people on Twitter are like, what the hell is all that about?
That's interesting. I wonder if that was like what they were trying to do, at least as like a marketing campaign, and it like they had to abandon it.
Wouldn't probably it be cool to see a trailer like that says please close your eyes and listen only, and like you had to imagine the trailer at least?
Yeah, I feel like that would be really cool. I feel like if anything, maybe that was the intent, but because of the strikes, they're so nervous about like
taking a risk.
Yeah, that they're like, we're just gonna show you.
Okay.
Because I feel like I saw a lot. Like, okay.
so what's your number?
Maybe like a 5. I'll probably see it. I feel like I'll definitely end up going and seeing it because I kind of just I crawl into the theater for the horror movies.
Yeah, same here. Time.
So it's like I'll probably see it, but I'm not like woohoo about it really.
Okay, and last one, Mean Girls.
0.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
It doesn't look good. I'm happy because this trailer, they did have the they stopped like trying to trick you about it being a musical. They actually had the musical singing in this trailer I just watched, because originally they were doing like it was like different music, so it seemed like almost it wasn't a musical too. But now it's clear it's a musical. I don't need more Mean Girls personally. Like, I loved Mean Girls when I was 12. 13. Mm-hmm. And now I look back on Mean Girls and I'm like, ooh, like it's not aging the best in general, in my opinion. And so I'm like, I don't really need like a rehashed version of it.
A musical version, yeah.
A musical version nonetheless. And they don't need that.
I think they've confirmed this movie was shot like insanely fast.
Yes, they like speed rushed it.
People are worried that like it's going to be pretty low quality, kind of just like just throwing it out there, throwing spaghetti on the wall, seeing what sticks and see what happens kind of deal.
I feel like too the trailers like are centering so much around Regina, and I feel like that's really weird because the story originally is at least slightly compelling because it's from Katie's point perspective of view.
yeah,
so it's weird seeing the head mean girl like centered so heavily.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not like either. A 2. I'll maybe crawl in there if I need to on a 11 a.m. showing on like a Tuesday if I need to.
That'll be nice. It'll be quiet.
It'll be quiet. Okay. Well, wow, what a way to end this episode. I love the trailer recap. We should do that more often.
Okay, I'm super down because, yeah, I find what is or is not included for trailers really fascinating because sometimes it is based off of, like, the same stuff from the distributor, you mm-hmm. know? What is it? I think it's my Twilight DVDs are all mostly, like, Summit and Lionsgate projects. Movies, yeah. So it's, like, you get those, but then other times it's, like, this pretty diverse spread. So it's fun talking about it.
I agree. I know. I'm about to go see Thanksgiving in, like, the next hour, ooh. And I'm sure there'll be a couple of, like, I'll see the Imaginary trailer, I'm sure. And oh, you've got there'll it. Be some other yeah. horror movie related trailers coming up. So
are there any more horrors coming out this year? I feel like no. I feel like we're done.
I think we're done. Like it's a Wonderful Knife came out last week, last Friday.
Okay.
But I think we're donezo after Thanksgiving. Like I can't think of a December horror coming out this year. Next year we'll get one, but not this year.
Yeah. This is a big year for horror, I feel like. There were a lot.
We're going to do a recap soon because there was a lot, but like, I don't think it was as strong as last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
By being honest. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay, well, okay. On that note, are you planning on seeing Thanksgiving? What's your plan on that?
I am. I was a little bit like, maybe I'll just see it once I can watch it at home. But then my sister, when we were texting, because I was like, you'll be home, we can see stuff, because we always go to the movies together. And so she was like, yeah, we can see Hunger Games. And I was like, yeah, that'd be great. And then she said, I'd also, I think, really like to see Thanksgiving. And I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, let's do that then. So I mean, we'll probably see both.
Initial reactions are really positive.
Great.
And everybody's that's saying, like, it's just like a good old fashioned slasher.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited to watch it next hour, not gonna lie. So
I'm really excited for you, and I'm excited to hear how you're feeling after.
I will let you know. I'll let you know. You'll probably be asleep. That's okay.
That's true. Yeah, it's 8:25. It's it's my bedtime.
It's getting close.
We're officially in the zone where I get into bed and turn the lights off, and like I'm like, I'm going to sleep now. Like
perfect
wind down time.
All right. Well, we've discussed Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
Yes.
Final consensus.
Go see it.
Go see it. That's our consensus.
Yeah.
Thumbs up. That's my consensus.
Yeah. I gave it a 3.5 on Letterboxd, but also a heart.
I gave it a 3.5, and I never use the hearts on Letterboxd, so just a 3.5.
Oh my God. I love giving things hearts.
What does a heart even do?
It says, I love you.
Does it play any like technical aspect in the app though?
Oh yeah, when you like are on your profile and there's that tab called likes, you know, uh-huh. When you click on that, it filters into 3 films, reviews, and lists.
Oh.
So it will put all the movies that you've liked on into its own like little list. So I do find it helpful in that regard of like.
I don't think I have a single movie on there then.
That's so fascinating because it is interesting looking at it where like obviously the stuff I'm rating 5 a lot of the time I'm also liking, but then it's also intermixed with stuff that I'm maybe giving like 2.5 stars, but I also put a like on, you know,
oh,
like
it's a
cool mix of stuff.
Like Kung Pao Into the Fist?
I haven't seen that. My example would probably be Vampire Academy.
Okay. Never seen that.
Not a good movie, but it's so much fun to watch. I love it.
There you go. That's yeah. Exactly Kung Pao for me, so.
Okay.
All right. Well, at this point, I want to thank you so much, everybody who's been listening to this podcast. If you want to check out more, we plugged a lot in the beginning, so I will plug once more. But we do have a Patreon. You can sign up for free. The perks for signing up for free are as follows. 1, sometimes we release public episodes early, and if we do, you get access to those as well, because it's public. Mm.
Yeah.
2, you will get access to 1 Patreon exclusive episode a month. It's usually kind of random. Sometimes it's a news episode. Sometimes it's a draft episode. It could be whatever, but you get access to 1 exclusive episode a month, just being a free subscriber. If you want to look at the other perks and other tiers, go ahead. But again, you don't have to be a Patreon to support this podcast. We appreciate mm-hmm. you just listening. That is good enough for us.
Yeah. And there's plenty of ways to support us. For free as well, like liking the podcast and rating it and
yeah.
leaving reviews on Apple Podcasts, sending us nice messages. I cry every time.
Literally, Clara does cry every single time.
I,
that is not even hyperbole.
It's really compulsive at this point. Like, the second anyone is like, can I please give you a compliment? I'm like, okay, you really need to.
Yeah, that's okay. So, yeah, you can do that too. Or if you can't do any of those things, just listening just helps.
Yes, listening helps. And you can also follow us on Letterboxd. We have a House of Cinema Letterboxd account. Have we ever plugged that on here?
I don't think we've ever plugged that before. Oh, it's an actual HQ account as well, too. It's not even it's a profile. It's an HQ account.
We have an HQ account. You can follow that. We make lists on there.
You make them.
Okay, I make lists on there. Obviously, for public, anyone can see those by scrolling, but I also have been making master lists of the films we cover on the Patreon. So if you're kind of, like, debating whether or not you're interested, that's a nice little thing, I feel like, because you can see what movies we've talked about and see if it's stuff you want to hear us discuss more.
Perfect. Okay. Well said. All right. Thanks. Well, there's so many things now, right? on that note, it is time for us to say goodbye. Clara, I'll talk to you later. Listeners, I hope you have a wonderful day, night, week, and weekend. And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.